Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome back to another edition of a podcast that is devoted to pushing progressive policies and the progressive movement here in the state of Michigan. That's right, you're listening to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston. This is a podcast that is devoted to those who are sick and tired of watching conservatism, actually 40 years of Reaganism, destroy the state that we love. It's a podcast devoted to push back against those who push these destructive policies for some 40 years in Michigan, but it's also a podcast that pushes back against those who sat by and allowed it to happen. It's a podcast that's devoted to common sense solutions, like backing Governor Gretchen Whitmer's blueprints to fix our roads, infrastructure, environment, and education system, which have deteriorated under years and years and years of conservatism. It's a podcast that's here to remind my fellow Michiganders that if we just pay attention and fight back and push for these common sense solutions, Michigan can once again regain the glory of its past. It's a podcast that's here to remind you that in order to retain its old glory, we must leave behind the backwards, illogical, and idiotic policies that have led to her deteriorating status. It's a podcast that highlights how groups like Progress Michigan, Clean Water Action, and so many other movements led by other groups and individuals are leading the change to bring Michigan back. It's a podcast that's showing the other Great Lakes states that we are ready to show the way, that we are ready to right the decades of wrong, that we are ready to make Michigan a home for everybody. But I'm not just going to throw out progressive ideas and ideals and just believe that's all that has to be done. No, I understand it's going to take some work. That means we've got to not only get our ideas out into the mainstream, but we've got to explain to the public how these progressive ideas have helped them and this country for years and can continue to do so. Now, in Michigan, we have no greater visceral illustration of how conservative policies have failed us than we do with our roads. The roads are in shambles. I know, that's not real breaking news. Everybody knows that. Everybody in Michigan knows something's got to be done. Governor Whitmer went out on a limb with her 45-cent gas tax hike, which most Michiganders are not really ready to stomach, and okay, I understand that. Some business groups are accepting a reality of higher gas taxes, however, others are not. But I'm going to give the governor credit for at least being honest with all of us. In a way, Whitmer is not just challenging the Republican legislature, she's challenging all of us. She's asking, how far are we willing to go to fix our decaying infrastructure thanks to years of Republican misconduct? Last week, I blogged about how some economists back Whitmer's call to raise business taxes, you know, which is something similar that I've been advocating here for quite some time. We've all got to have some skin in the game. However, for years, I did attack former Republican Governor Rick Snyder's move to slash corporate taxes while raising pension taxes. I said that was simply redistributing wealth from the people back up to the connected, back up to the donor base of the Republican Party. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not suddenly for slashing corporate taxes. No, not at all. I did not agree with that rule one bit. But those same economists who supported Whitmer's business tax increase also criticized her insistence on repealing the pension tax. They argued that we need every cent we can get to fix the infrastructure, and that it seems a bit counterintuitive to cut the retiree tax at this moment in time. Besides, the pension tax, for the most part, benefits the more affluent Michiganders. So, now I've had to revisit my original position. And thanks to friend of the show, Rick Haglin, economics writer for the fantastic online publication Michigan Advance, for pointing out that fact, I am now really reconsidering my original position. You see, we're at a time where we must reinvest in Michigan. It's a time when we can show the rest of the country how it's done. I mean, we've become so beholden to tax cuts, and that's resulted in disastrous outcomes. And we're actually falling behind Ohio. We are falling behind Ohio on this front. Listen up. This is from the Columbus Dispatch on April the 3rd. It says, Ohio drivers will pay an extra 10.5 cents per gallon in state gasoline taxes starting on July 1st. Those changes are part of a compromised two-year transportation budget that the legislature approved. A week-long stalemate between House and Senate Republicans was broken when they agreed to increase Ohio's 28-cent gas tax to 38.5 cents. The state's tax on diesel fuel will increase by 19 cents to 47 cents a gallon. For a driver who travels 13,500 miles per day in a vehicle getting 25 miles per gallon, the new tax would cost $57 more, or about $1.10 per week. The tax increase will take effect on July the 1st. And remember, they have the Ohio Turnpike, so they have, you know, toll roads. How far are we willing to go here in Michigan? Another major plank in Governor Whitmer's agenda is reinvesting in education. It's needed in so many ways, but especially in teachers' pay. We've experienced a teacher shortage here in Michigan throughout the years, and thanks to a new Michigan Education Association survey, we perhaps have an understanding as to why. Teacher pay has dropped an average of just under $62,000 last year. That's a $700 drop from 2011, and when added with inflation, that represents an over $6,000 cut. A $6,000 pay cut. That explains why some 1 in 5 new teachers are choosing to leave the profession. They can't afford to work in a field where they aren't getting paid, especially if they're dealing with high student debt. And don't forget that younger teachers aren't just being paid less, but they are being asked to contribute more to their retirement. This isn't just hitting just young teachers. This is hitting young people in general, because according to one study by American Student Assistance, more than half of them said that their high student debt forced their hand in making their first career choice. How's anyone supposed to get ahead if this trend continues? And thanks to years of Republican slashing, the total teacher workforce number, by the way, has dropped by 16%. That coincides with students leaving the state over the years, of course. We can thank years of neoliberal policies for that. Oh, and speaking of neoliberal policies, according to MLive, the MEA study also notes that the increase in charter schools appears to have driven down salaries. The legislature lifted the cap on the number of charter schools in 2011, and charters enrolled 10% of the public school population in 2017 and 18. Charters tend to pay less than traditional public schools. So, using for-profit charter schools has driven down teacher salaries. It's almost as if this were a long-term plan or something. This disinvestment project in the state of Michigan has led to failure. That's why progressives have been fighting to lead the change to recover much of what has been lost. Progressive ballot initiatives passed by big numbers last fall, only to have the Republican legislature and lame duck water down those bills. That's the only way they could win, is by doing things in secret, is by doing things behind closed doors. When things are out in the open, when people understand exactly what progressives are pushing, they like those policies. We voted for candidates here in Michigan who vowed to clean up our water system from years of deregulatory abuse. And we voted for those who vowed to close down the Line 5 oil pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac, something that a majority of Michiganders want to happen. But despite these gains, years of Republican gerrymandering prevented Democrats from taking over the legislature. Now, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but Michiganders are catching up to the Republican game. And that's why one of the ballot initiatives that passed last fall was to end gerrymandering. It was a huge victory, not just for progressives, but for all Michiganders who believe in democracy. By the way, a quick note, Enbridge Energy, that Canadian company I talked about on last week's podcast that's pushing to keep the Line 5 pipeline open, was one of the major donors for groups opposed to the gerrymandering ballot initiative. You know, it's almost as if Enbridge feared that they wouldn't be able to get their way anymore if the people here in Michigan were better represented. Go figure. But despite the big progressive victories in Michigan, Republicans are still up to their old bag of tricks. You see, Michigan Republicans are hopping aboard the Donald Trump train of white nationalism. And they are now pushing a pair of bills that punish local cities for prohibiting law enforcement from asking about a person's immigration status. Why is this needed? Why is this the cause célèbre for Michigan Republicans? Maybe it's because Republicans don't have any ideas to save our state. Maybe they are just bankrupt of real ideas. They are bankrupt of real solutions. So essentially, all they've got is for you to want to blame immigrants for why the state is struggling so much. Don't pay attention to years and years of Republican policies that have ruined the state. No, pay attention to undocumented workers. See, they're to blame. Coming up, Chris Hackbarth from the Michigan Municipal League will be joining me to talk more about these dangerous bills. Thanks again for listening to this edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston. Remember, you can find me on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing. Again, that's at Left of Lansing. Back with more right after this.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Upset with Pat? Want to give him a piece of your mind? Or do you actually want to praise Pat for everything that he does? Yeah, right. Just email him, leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Don't forget to also visit leftoflansing.com. That's leftoflansing.com. That's where I post the weekly podcast, plus some other news and information that I run across throughout the week. That's leftoflansing.com. As I said before the break, Republicans in Michigan are now trying to pass a pair of bills that would punish some local cities or counties for prohibiting law enforcement from asking about a person's immigration status. For some reason, they believe this is an issue that must be dealt with right now. Joining me right now to talk more about this is Chris Hackbarth. Chris is the Director of State and Federal Affairs for the Michigan Municipal League. Chris, thanks a lot for being on the Left of Lansing podcast this week.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, in the midst of trying to find ways to fix our crumbling infrastructure, our educational system, our environment, our water, and on and on and on, the Michigan Republican leadership for some reason believes that banning so-called sanctuary cities should be on the top of the priority list. Strange. This week, a pair of bills passed the State House Committee of Military, Veterans, and Homeland Security on a party line vote. I'll tell you real quick, Republicans voted for the bill, Democrats voted against the bill in this committee. These bills are now headed to the House Ways and Means Committee. Chris, I was wondering if you could explain exactly what these bills are designed to do and how they could affect local municipalities that pass laws preventing local law enforcement from playing a role in determining a person's immigration status.
Yeah, so these two bills target city, village, township, and county governments only, and basically state that the local unit of government, any one of those local units of government, cannot have any policy ordinance, anything written at the local level that could be construed to limit or prohibit communication or cooperation with federal immigration authorities. The issue there is those terms are so broad, no one really knows what constitutes limiting cooperation or communication. Does it mean I'm a community that has said that we don't respond to ICE detainer requests because they're not actually legal warrants? So if we don't respond to them, are we all of a sudden limiting cooperation with immigration officials? And now are those individuals from the community individually liable, civilly liable? And that's one of those things I think that when you look at this language in this bill, it goes way overly broad in terms of potential impact and really opens every city, village, township, county in the state to potential liability.
Since you brought up ICE, do they have warrant power?
The issue that has arisen is there are different types of legal warrants for someone's arrest, for someone's detention. There have been numerous court cases around the country and lots of legal uncertainty about, and constitutional uncertainty about, how legal are these detainer requests, and if you respond to them, is the city then liable for doing something that is inappropriate? And that you've seen this, you've seen court cases around the country where that's actually been the problem, where this wasn't viewed, the person who was detained or handed over sued, and it was found that they should not have been handed over because it wasn't a legal warrant. So like I said, there's so many open questions, and the language is so broad, and it allows even to the point of, if an individual resident of a community feels that you might have something on the books that violates this act, they can take you to court.
So the local municipalities could be liable for all this. I mean, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I mean, at all. I'm sorry. It just doesn't really make sense right now because we have so many local municipalities that are struggling to find just enough money to provide basic services, let alone having to devote more resources into finding out who or who's not here illegally. help me out here, Chris.
Well, I think one of the concerns that we raised in what we provided in a written manner was that exact thing, is now you've got the potential, should this language make it all the way through the process and be signed by the governor, this language would cause every local official to constantly be looking over their shoulder. And one of the weird parts about this is that it even says that if you have something that violates this act, you have to bring it into compliance with the act within 6 months. And if you don't, if it's even on your books, you might have something in your ordinance from 30 years ago, from in your city charter, when the city charter was first written, that you don't enforce, you don't even know is in there. But if someone finds it and finds that it's still on the book, and they believe that it could be in violation of this act, limiting or prohibiting communication or cooperation, they can take you to court over that, even if you're not enforcing it, which is just crazy.
Just seems like there are more important things going on. Joining me right now is Chris Hackbarth. He is the Director of State and Federal Affairs for the Michigan Municipal League here on the Left of Lansing podcast. How many counties or cities throughout Michigan have passed laws saying that they won't cooperate with federal immigration officials or, you know, like ICE, for instance?
I am not aware of any community in Michigan, any local government in Michigan, that has violated what the Attorney General put out in 2017 about what constitutes sanctuary city in a violation. There is a U.S. Code Section 8, 1373, Section 1373, that talks about that no local unit can violate that section, which is you can't prohibit the sharing of information back and forth if that information is available. If you've got the information and you're sharing it back and forth, but many places, you know, think about a traffic stop. How many times during a traffic stop you're asked for your license and registration? You know, asking for your green card or your legal status is not part of the normal traffic stop process. So there really isn't, in local law enforcement, there really isn't a, unless there's a reason, and I think there was testimony in committee yesterday where someone offered up that they weren't U.S. citizens. At that point, then, okay, well then, if we've got some sort of reason to inquire deeper. But this is not information that local law enforcement normally keeps track of or normally inquires about. Like I said, I'm not aware of any local unit in Michigan that's in violation of what the Attorney General has identified as a sanctuary city policy.
Okay, so then why is it then that these Republicans in Lansing believe that we need this law on the books?
Had I been able to testify, that was one of the questions I was going to ask.
Okay.
I'm not aware of situations in Michigan where there have been criminal individuals who have been released, so there's a safety concern. I think if you look at law enforcement, any one of the 520 plus cities and villages in the state, our townships, our counties, I'm not aware of any law enforcement official who is going to have someone that is where there's a crime been committed and they're not going to keep people safe. That's not what's going on. And so, like I said, I'm not sure what the focus of the legislation that's being proposed is focusing on.
Chris Hackbarth, he is with the Michigan Municipal League, and he's on with me on the Left of Lansing podcast here this week. You brought up local law enforcement. There were some who did testify against the bill in that committee. Is that true?
Correct. I believe one of the Ingham County deputy sheriffs was able to testify in opposition to the bill.
What was their reasoning for their opposition?
Local law enforcement knows how to do their job, and they know how to keep their residents safe, and Lansing shouldn't be inserting itself into that local law enforcement process.
These bills were introduced by State House Republican Pamela Hornberger from Macomb County, Macomb and St. Clair County, I think, and Beau LaFay from Iron Mountain. Now, Representative Hornberger claimed in the Detroit Free Press that these bills are not discriminatory by nature and that they are simply trying to give law enforcement the tools that they need to do their job. What is your reaction to that kind of statement?
I go back to what does the bill say? The bill uses language like limiting or prohibiting cooperation or communication. But those are not defined terms. So, and you're giving civil liability against individuals as well as local units. So employees can be sued civilly under this. You're opening up local units to so much liability, and every city in the state, not just ones that people might say, oh, well, that's a sanctuary city or they've got a sanctuary city policy. No, it's every city in the state, every village, every township is potentially liable for someone finding something in their charter, in their code of ordinances, or in some policy and saying, well, that would be a violation of cooperation. You're limiting communication. What does that mean? No one knows what that means, and that is what is the real problem with these bills.
You know, agriculture, as far as I know, is one of the biggest industries here in Michigan. and maybe even the second biggest industry. Have you been able to talk to anybody in the agricultural community to see how these bills are playing with them, considering that many of them rely on migrant work at their operations?
I haven't this year, no. I know in the past when this legislation has come up in previous terms, individuals from that industry have spoken up and have expressed concerns. You've obviously heard, I know the Catholic Conference spoke yesterday. You heard from a number of civic organizations, law enforcement. So I know all of local government submitted cards in opposition. There's a lot of concerns about how the language in these bills is structured and what the actual problem is that is attempting to be addressed.
Chris, do you believe that Republicans are trying to pass this quickly because they think that they've got a winning issue here to take to Democratic Governor Whitmer and Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel? I mean, do they believe, watching Donald Trump, that they think that this is an issue that'll work for them?
I don't know that I can answer that. What we've got now is, thankfully, we have a two-committee process in the House, and so there will be an opportunity. Hopefully, there were a number of people, including ourselves, who were not able to testify yesterday in committee who had requested to testify. Hopefully, should this bill receive any further consideration by the Ways and Means Committee, we'll have an opportunity, and other folks who are interested in testifying will have an opportunity to testify in front of that committee to explain the concerns we have. And certainly, because of this two-committee process, there is another opportunity to express concerns and hopefully get folks lined up to oppose the bill.
I'm not trying to sound pessimistic, but what do you think the chances are that that this bill is going to get stalled in the next committee and that it's going to get stalled in the House then thereafter?
You've heard the headlines around Lansing the last 3-4 months, even 6 months. Roads, auto insurance, jobs, the economy. I have not heard this issue being touted by a broad spectrum of individuals and leadership in any of the caucuses or the governor's office as being something that is of primary concern to anyone. We will continue to work, members of now the Ways and Means Committee and leadership in the House on both sides of the aisle, to ask them to please not bring this bill up, defeat this bill, and not consider it any further.
Right. And I think that's why I asked you just a few minutes ago. I mean, why are they bringing this up? Because with everything else that is going on and everything else that's being debated, it just is boggling the mind right now why they want to bring up this divisive issue when we've got so many other things, like you said, with roads and like I said earlier, with the environment and with water. And it just doesn't really make any sense why they are going about this, unless for some reason they think that following in Donald Trump's footsteps is going to help them politically. I'm not sure how. It's pretty obvious, isn't it, Chris, that these bills are simply just going to create more distrust between citizens in any town or any village or anybody in a county, for instance, against police. I mean, it just seems like that's going to happen, that there's going to be distrust now. And I don't know how that's going to work out for everybody involved.
What's interesting is when you look at the headlines in the newspaper today about yesterday's committee action, most of the headlines talked exactly about what you're referencing, is that the perception of what these bills will do is going to create that mood, that atmosphere around this issue. As I mentioned, when you look at, should these bills become law, the effect is every local official in every local unit of government is going to have to look over their shoulder at all times to make sure that someone is not thinking, hey, did that decision I made or did that ordinance we wrote, is that somehow going to be construed as limiting or prohibiting communication or cooperation? That's out there, and every local official is going to be faced with that, whether it's the police officer on the street or whether it's the local clerk or someone who's working at the counter in the water billing office.
And Chris, won't this maybe prevent some people from actually going to police for help? Because they may be afraid something's going to happen?
You certainly heard a lot of testimony from folks yesterday about that.
Wow. I just don't understand how there are some on the conservative side who believe that this is the way to go. I don't understand how they believe that this is a way to make Michigan a better place, a way to make Michigan a more welcoming place for people to want to stay, for people to want to work, for people to want to live. It doesn't make any sense to me right now why they are choosing to make this a fight. But I can sleep well at night knowing that people like you and organizations like the Michigan Municipal League are willing to put up the big fight against this kind of thinking. Chris, before I let you go, the Michigan Municipal League also has a podcast. Hey, would you care to talk about that a little bit more?
Yes, we do. We have a number of different ones that focus on different issues. I believe we just had one focusing on the human trafficking issue this week.
And how can people find it?
MML.org is our main webpage, and all of our communications and podcasts. We do a Facebook live stream of legislative issues every 2 weeks. We call it Monday Morning Live. All those can be found on our webpage at MML.org.
Well, Chris, thank you very much for being on the Left of Lansing podcast here today. Greatly appreciated. And you know what? I hope to have you back on in the future if you would consider it, so that way we could talk about the other main issues, actually the main issues that are affecting the state, like, for instance, the roads, how to clean up our water, and also how to make Michigan's cities and towns thrive in the future and to get ready for the future economy. I'd appreciate it if you would consider coming back next time to talk more about those important issues.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invitation.
Chris Hackbarth from the Michigan Municipal League. And I find it completely hypocritical of conservatives who for years demanded that we allow local governments to figure out the best solutions for their communities. They told us for years that we shouldn't count on the federal government or even state governments to set policies. No, no, no. It should be left up to local communities. That's what they told me. That's what they told you for years. But we've learned recently that when it comes to the environment or prevailing wages or now pushing legislation forcing local cities to virtually spy on its people, that the time-honored conservative tradition of local control was all smoke and mirrors. Instead of finding ways to fix a broken immigration system or instead of finding ways to help cities, the Michigan Republican Party, that's right, the Michigan Republican Party, is devoted to attacking the least fortunate. You know, like Jesus would have done.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Upset with something you've heard? Did Pat say something you think is ignorant, stupid, or arrogant? Or do you actually agree with something Pat said on the podcast? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Time for the Left of Lansing last call. I'd like to thank once again Chris Hackbarth from the Michigan Municipal League for joining the LOL podcast this week. And as we talked about before the break, you should check out the Michigan Municipal League's podcast titled Where We Live. And this week they tackle the subject of sex trafficking, which is, and I didn't know this, but it is the second largest criminal enterprise behind drugs here in the state. It's an illuminating half hour, and I would encourage you to give it a listen. I provided a link to that podcast on leftoflansing.com. Chris was able to explain in perfect detail just how damaging these state house bills designed to ban welcome cities would be to local municipalities throughout the state. These bills would put an unwarranted pressure on cities and towns and stretch their already thin resources. Police already have enough to do. And now we're asking them to play immigration officers as well? But even more than that, common sense tells us that passing these bills will also lead to racial profiling. It's inevitable. Of course that's going to happen. The supporters who say otherwise are simply lying. These bills do nothing. They do nothing than promote attacking one group of people. No, not undocumented people, since they come in all nationalities and races. No, it's about attacking people who, you know, don't look white. I'm sorry, who don't look right. During that hearing this week in front of the State House Military Veterans and Homeland Security Committee, which Republicans again passed on a 5-4 vote, Akash Patel, a U of M law student, testified against the bill, stating the obvious reasons as to why it'll only create more problems than solutions.
I've spent most of my life in Oklahoma, a state that is infamously anti-immigrant, where they have cities and counties that are explicitly anti-sanctuary. My sister and I have both been inappropriately asked about my citizenship, and I have been inappropriately asked if I was a terrorist, usually on days when I had a beard. When these policies are enacted, community members don't trust the police, and police can't rely on community members for input to complete their investigations. These are not abstract hypotheticals. These are the unfortunate, inevitable realities of policies like this.
And this is noteworthy, too. I wanted to add this. Democratic State Representative Mary Manoogian, she is the youngest woman serving in the state legislature right now at the age of 26. She asked Mr. Patel another unintended consequence this bill would present.
I do have a brief question for you, and I will probably have to ask you to speak on your sister's behalf. So I'm sad that she's not here, that she can answer this question, but I'd like to ask you, Should a crime occur where your sister is the victim, and, you know, I hate to bring this up, but if there's a situation of domestic abuse or a sexual assault, do you believe that your sister would feel comfortable with going to law enforcement to report such a crime?
Absolutely not.
Thank you, sir.
Wow. But that didn't faze the chairman of the committee, Beau LaFave, and his Republican allies. Riley Began, a reporter for the Fantastic Bridge magazine, wrote an article on this bill. She spoke with Representative LaFave about why he felt that these bills were important to pass right now. And here's what Ms. Began wrote, and I quote, LaFave said he has heard multiple reports of police officers who were fired or demoted for choosing to fulfill federal immigration authority orders, and it's important the state protect local law enforcement officers from political retribution. I'm not mandating that anybody go and enforce immigration laws, but if an officer so chooses, they should not be fired for doing so, LaFave said. Okay. Well, I contacted Riley Began from The Bridge magazine about Mr. LaFave's assertion that police officers were, quote-unquote, fired or demoted for adhering to federal immigration orders. And Riley was kind enough to respond and to allow me to share her response here on this podcast. So I inquired if she could verify if Mr. LaFave's charges were indeed true. Ms. Began said, and this is a quote, I can verify that Representative LaFave said that to me, but I cannot verify whether or not it's true. He said he has gotten 3 reports in his office, but that they're confidential and he hasn't been able to convince them to go on the record about it yet. Okay, so that's what she said to me. Now, Ms. Began even sent me part of her transcript questioning with LaFave on that very issue. She asks LaFave if he's got any evidence of police getting fired or demoted for following federal immigration orders. His response, and I quote, I have 3 confidential reports in my office of demotions and similar off-the-books things that have happened to officers that have reported individuals to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. No one willing to go on the record yet, but even if it hadn't happened to anyone, which I know it has, there's no reason why we shouldn't be protecting these officers to let them call for backup without political retribution. Wow. Well, first, thank you, Riley Began from The Bridge magazine, for providing Left of Lansing with that information. The article that she wrote is posted on leftoflansing.com. Now, secondly, Representative LaFave is not providing us with real evidence. It's hearsay at best. It's speculative. No one has gone on the record. I mean, what kind of show is LaFave running here? You're trying to pass a bill that will affect the local economies of many cities throughout Michigan and jeopardize the police-citizen relationship on top of that? On what ground? On what ground? Because you heard something might have happened? This bill is not grounded in reality, and it's not grounded in common sense. Now, Ms. Began's article did contain something that caught my eye, and it's something that I alluded to during my talk with Mr. Hackbarth. She wrote, and I quote, and this is from the article, however, the legislature may choose to advance the bills to test how Governor Whitmer responds to such issues or to gain leverage for other priorities, such as the budget, said Sarah Hubbard, principal of Lansing-based lobbying firm Acuitas. Whether it's a waste of time or not is completely beside the point. Some of these things are more political in nature, Hubbard said. Well, there you go. There you have it. They want to set up a fight with a new Democratic governor. Why? Because that's all they've got. Republicans, again, have no real solutions to problems, which is a shame considering how many problems they've created here in Michigan. All they've got are divisive issues. All they've got are talk radio issues to fire up their base. Are you surprised? Are you surprised at all? And they wonder why they are getting trounced at the polls. Please, please call your state reps and senators and tell them that House Bills 4083 and 4090 don't represent our values here in Michigan. And beg these state legislators, especially if they are on the Republican side, to start fighting for the people rather than against them. It would be a nice change.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
Thank you, Dr. Heather. I know there are times that many of you would like to simply throw up your arms and say, to hell with this, and tune out. But as I've said before, that's exactly what they want you to do. They want to barrage you with all kinds of negativity and the feeling of hopelessness. That's how the right wing grabbed power, especially during the Obama years. Let's face it, With Obama in office, many cashed out after the 2008 election. But that's where the right wing, backed by their corporate benefactors, gained control of state houses, governor seats, and Congress. But I feel like we have actually returned to the fight in substantial numbers this time, led by some younger progressives. And I'm talking about younger progressives in this state, like Representative Mary Manoogian, as you heard from that clip I played a few minutes ago. People like her did not give in to despair after the 2016 election. No, they did the exact opposite, which is to fight against the destructive policies espoused by the reactionary right wing of this country. You know, many people rushed out to the Capitol building in Lansing this week to speak out and protest these anti-Welcome City bills that were proposed by Republicans. And that makes me feel real good about our chances. It really does. It makes me feel good that we are refusing to tune out this time. It makes me proud that many are joining the progressive fight to make Michigan a better place. Join the fight. Tune in. Don't tune out. Next week, I'll be talking with Aaron Roberts from the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence, as April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. That should be another insightful talk here on the podcast. Remember, the Left of Lansing podcast is posted on leftoflansing.com. It's also available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, and Google. Please subscribe. And if you do subscribe, do me a favor, give it a good rating if you can. To my fellow LOLs out there, always, always, always take the battle to them. I'm Pat Johnston. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.